Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man who should have gotten rid of his sunglasses but didn't, Adam Farmer.
Okay, I'll take that. I was about to laugh the entire time, so that was good.
So yeah, we're here to talk about the Christmas special, Doctor Who Christmas special 2015. A little bit late. We're already into 2016. I think we're like, what? We're a good week after this thing aired.
Oh, yeah. More. No, a good week. Yeah, we'll say it's a week. That's a little bit more acceptable than saying 2 or 3 weeks past.
But, you know, it's the holidays. We got a lot of stuff going on. We took our time. We know there's not another Doctor Who episode coming out until next, you know, or until this coming fall. So
We were digesting it, right? We wanted to savor the last episode that we have of Doctor Who for a while. So we watched it, rewatched it, kind of meditated a little bit on it. It's good.
And the new Star Wars movie came out, so I think we were like taking our time watching that, like everybody else in the world seems to be doing. But for now, we're here to talk about the Husbands of River Song.
All of them. All the husbands.
All the Husbands of River Song. So let's just get right into it.
Sounds good.
All right. So this episode was written by Stephen Moffat, directed by Douglas Mackinnon. And
I'll take it.
This is story 260. And I guess it's technically still season 9, kind of in between season 9 and 10, I guess. And yeah. So Husbands of River Song.
Husbands of River Song.
Where do we begin?
That's a great question. Maybe at the beginning.
It was Christmas Day, 53.
It was the night before Christmas.
This episode kind of started out, I think you knew pretty quick what you were going to get with this episode. If the previews didn't tip us off, the opening sequence of this episode should have tipped you off that we were going to get kind of one of the more cheesy episodes of Doctor Who. Which,
yeah,
I guess the Christmas episodes tend to go that direction.
Yeah, and I think last year we had a little bit more of a serious tone, even though there was the showing up of Santa Claus himself and some of those different things like that. But you're right, they tend to be more on the goofy side of things. You before we started recording, you mentioned the word cheesy. That's probably the best word to throw out there, the cheesier side of things. And yeah, you're right, we get the crash landing of a massive flying saucer, which is not something that you see every day in Doctor Who, something as generic as a flying saucer. And then there we are, we're off to the races. Christmas Day 53.
Yeah, we have the flying saucer, then we have the first scene of the Doctor with the antlers, and he kind of, you know, scolds the TARDIS for materializing antlers on his head. So right out the gate, you know, it's just, it's going to be one of those episodes.
But to its credit, right out of the gate, not only did we have that feeling, that sense that it's going to be a cheesier episode, but we are also greeted by possibly one of my favorite characters from this episode, Nardole. The round-headed, hairless servant of who he's later find out to be Riversong. But yeah, I loved him. He was a highlight of the episode for me.
Yeah, I liked that guy too. He was familiar to me. I've seen him in a couple other movies. You know, typically he doesn't typically play a main character, but he typically plays a comedic side character, much like he did in this episode. So I was kind of familiar with that actor, and yeah, I enjoyed him in this episode as well. I thought he did a really good job. But, yeah, so the big story for this episode, I guess, is the return of River Song. We haven't seen River Song since Matt Smith, right?
Angels Take Manhattan.
And we haven't seen her with Capaldi.
I stand corrected. Not Angels Take Manhattan. It was after that. It was Fields of Trenzalore, right? Is the last time we saw her in one shape or form or another?
I think you're correct.
Yeah, because the doctor's name, she is the hologram with Jenna Coleman before Claire goes into the time stream.
Right. Okay, yeah. So we did get a little bit of Coleman-River interaction in that
episode. Very little, but okay. Yes.
Yeah, because I that was one thing I was thinking. I thought Coleman was going to make it to this Christmas special. So I was kind of thinking that would be an interesting dynamic to see those two characters interact for an entire episode, but we didn't get that. This is actually, I think I saw, this is the first time. So this is the first episode of Doctor Who since the 2012 series 7 episode, The Angels Take Manhattan, and the first starring Peter Capaldi to not feature Jenna Coleman.
Wow. 2012. That's insane.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
Angels Take Manhattan in series 7 was the last episode we had that did not feature Jenna Coleman. So
I didn't miss her. No, I mean, we weren't really given much space to even reflect on it. And to the doctor's credit, other than maybe a few passing comments that could have alluded to what happened previously, there really wasn't any comments or references to her either. The doctor, at least in this episode, either was too busy or too forgetful already. Why would he? He doesn't remember. Never mind. Scratch that. We know he forgot about her totally.
Well, he remembers the adventures, I guess, to an extent that he had with her, but he just doesn't remember. Oh, I guess he knows her name too now at this point, but he just doesn't remember what she looks like. I don't know.
How does that?
Yeah, I guess he's moved on, I guess is the point.
He's ready.
But so it's interesting. The doctor meets River. She mistakes him for the surgeon, which would be a cool Time Lord name, right?
Yeah, I was cool with that. The surgeon. You're the surgeon, kind of.
What should River Song's Time Lord name be? The archaeologist?
Yeah, I mean, either that, she has the professor, the archaeologist. Well, she carries the trowel, so I could totally see the archaeologist.
That's a little long. That's kind of a mouthful. I kind of like the professor better.
Professor?
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes.
So the doctor immediately recognizes her, but she obviously doesn't recognize him, which is an ongoing theme throughout the episode. I thought it was very humorous to watch Capaldi play the doctor in a way that he was very eager for her to realize it was him, even to the point of like straight up telling her that he's the doctor, and she just wasn't picking up on it.
Yeah, I loved, well, I don't know if you enjoyed it. You said that you thought it was interesting, but I enjoyed that aspect of this. I enjoyed seeing the doctor, Peter Capaldi's doctor especially, playing that role. It seems like Matt Smith was always excited to see River. Anytime that she appeared, they always had that banter back and forth. He always had that giddy excitement that Matt Smith brought to the doctor. I was interested to see how Capaldi would approach River, but I think it belies just the connection that the doctor has with River, the love that he really has for her, and the way that Capaldi was even giddy, even excited to see River. Some of the faces that he made throughout the episode were in and of themselves see Capaldi have those faces as the doctor when we're really not used to the doctor acting that way, at least Capaldi's doctor.
Yeah, he gets giddy around River.
Yeah.
It's like this, it's almost like he's got a crush on her a little bit.
Yeah, no, definitely. It was kind of fun to watch. But it was also, I don't know, I was getting frustrated by the fact that River had no idea who he was.
So did you buy it? I think it was pretty clear that she didn't know, but did you buy the fact that she shouldn't have known? Like, should she have picked up on it faster than she did?
I think yes, she should have been. And that's what I think on my first watch through the episode, that's what I found to be the most frustrating aspect of the episode. Yeah, it was cheesy. Yeah, there was a lot of gimmicky stuff going on, But the fact that River was so oblivious to who the Doctor was, because prior to this, River has always been portrayed as being like this very sharp, very quick individual. She, in some senses, was a step to two steps ahead of the Doctor. And yet, with all the clues that the Doctor was feeding her, she never picked up on it. And that was frustrating to me. And the only thing I can do to reconcile in my mind is that later on, after a little bit more interaction with the Doctor, they have the faces of the Doctor. There's only 12 of them. And she says, those are the only 12 that he can have. So maybe that's why she was just oblivious, because in her mind, he couldn't have been. But it was just, yeah, I was getting frustrated, annoyed even, by the fact that she had no idea who the Doctor was when she picked out who the Doctor was based on Tennant's eyes. So it's like, why couldn't she? How couldn't she recognize it? Were you facing the same thing, or am I just being angry fanboy right now?
No, I mean, I totally get where you're coming from. There was definitely a level of disbelief for me where I was thinking, man, she should have figured out by now that this guy's the Doctor. The way he's talking, the way he's problem solving, you know, she's married to the guy, for goodness sake. You know, you would think she'd be able to pick up on his quirks, his, you know, just his idiosyncrasies. And he blatantly tells her a number of times that he's like, I'm the Doctor. And she's like, well, you better be, you know.
Right.
She's just
right.
Thinking of him as a surgeon.
Or you're pretty sharp. Well, yeah, I went to a good school for the Doctor. It's like, he's saying it.
Yeah, but I kind of like your explanation that she wasn't even looking for the fact that he would have a different face. So no matter how similar he may seem to the Doctor, she never would have thought he was the Doctor, because she thought the Doctor had a limit of 13 faces. No, 12 faces.
12 faces.
Which she thought he had run out of generations.
Yeah, she obviously doesn't know about the War Doctor.
Right. The War Doctor was pictured in the lineup.
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay. Man. So there were 13 faces then.
So would that make sense? No, there would be 12 faces. So up to number 11.
Oh.
And then the 12th being the War Doctor. So she thought,
that makes sense.
I guess she thought he was out of generations at that point, or regenerations. Yeah, because I think the whole idea of Tennant using two, and I think the Doctor's only allowed to have 13. So maybe she was aware of that too.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know that when they are like jumping almost all the way to the end, she makes the comment as far as, aren't there rules? And he said there was this thing, and she said there probably was. Right. So she understands that there are rules to what's going on. But
right, and because didn't she? Okay, so River is a Time Lord herself, or at least half Time Lord. And she doesn't necessarily have any regenerations left. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Because she used them all up to save the Doctor's life earlier?
That's my understanding, is she has none.
Okay. But she does have a prolonged lifespan, which they explained in this episode.
Yes, 200 years old.
Okay. So that makes sense. So, well, okay, in general, how did you feel about River this episode? I know, I think I had heard you say before that you just didn't feel like she was acting like River as we know her. So
yeah,
is that an accurate assessment?
So we text back and forth shortly after we both watched it for the first time, and I made some comments as far as like, didn't really enjoy it. River just didn't seem like River. Something was off. It just seemed wrong to me. I didn't like what they did with River in this episode. That said, watching it again, I'm starting to realize that any time that we've ever seen River was when the Doctor was around. And she has always been that arrogant type character who always had the leg up. She always knew what was going on. She was always a very strong character in relation to the Doctor. And I guess I never thought of what would she be like if the Doctor wasn't around. And I think that's exactly what we saw. We saw exactly who she is when the Doctor's not around. And so a second watch through, it made a little bit more sense. I still was frustrated by the fact that she had no idea who the Doctor was. But I didn't mind her character as much. There's definitely high moments for her in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, they kept going. It almost seemed like they were going back and forth with her character. When you first meet her, she's obviously trying to take advantage of this, you know, this maniacal, what, I don't know what you would call him, a warlord, I guess.
Yeah.
And she knows that he has this diamond lodged in his head, and her whole purpose is to get the diamond. And initially you think, okay, she's doing this for the money. But then as she's kind of giving her speech to Hydro Flask, she's like, no, you've hurt so many people, and this diamond belongs to good people, and I'm going to return it to them. So then you're like, oh, maybe she's doing it for a noble reason. But then they go to the dinner, that, you know, the dinner ship, and the doctor's like, oh, I thought you were returning it to these people. And she's like, oh, why are you so boring? You know, like, no, I'm auctioning it off to the highest bidder. So they kept going back and forth where you're thinking, oh, maybe she's bad. Oh, maybe she's not. Oh, wait, yeah, she is kind of bad. So it was kind of, I wasn't really sure what they were trying to make us think about her.
Yeah, but don't you get that feeling in some of the previous episodes as well, where she's at, where you aren't quite sure if she is a good character or not? And I think that's one of the things that made her such an interesting character for the Doctor Who, because we see the Doctor as being, well, in a lot of cases, like that superior, morally superior character who makes those hard decisions, and he almost always chooses right or what have you. He's that special character, and yet, so we always have that picture of the Doctor, and yet we get this weird picture of River where she's flying around, she's riding Sweetie on the side of mountains, she's controlling the Roman legions. Like, she's always in this awkward position where you aren't really sure if you can trust her or not. I kind of feel like that's just fleshed out even more in this episode.
And she's been away from the Doctor long enough, and it seems like she's kind of bitter about that. That maybe the Doctor has moved on, because, you know, even when she's faced with the idea that the Doctor might come save her, she's like, no, he's not going to come save me. I don't know what he's doing, but he's definitely not coming to save me.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is a fair assessment, because the Doctor really didn't come to save her. He kind of accidentally landed on the same planet she was on.
Right.
So it wasn't like he was out looking for her. The TARDIS tends to take the Doctor to where he needs to be. And so maybe it was the TARDIS's doing that he landed on that planet at that time. But really, you know, her assessment that he's not going to come and save me, she was kind of right, because he was just there almost by coincidence.
Do you think one of the first lines that the Doctor has in the episode when he's complaining about the holographic antlers is that it's a time space ship, and he never asked it to cheer him up? Do you think, kind of along those lines, the TARDIS put him in Riversong's path to cheer him up?
Yeah, that's probably a really good explanation as to why he did end up there. But yeah, I'm just so curious about, like, the timeline and how long it's been since the last time she saw the Doctor.
Yeah.
You know, how long has he made her wait? We know she's 200 something years old at this point. So how old was she the last time the Doctor saw her? You know, was she, you know, 100 years old, or even only maybe 50 years old? And so it's been 150 years since she's seen the Doctor. So I could see, you know, if 150 years passes and your husband doesn't show back up, you are going to be kind of bitter about that. You are going to think of him not necessarily positively. You're going to be like, yeah, he kind of just left me hanging.
Yeah. And it is one of those, like, and that's where I think the timeline is a little bit confusing, because when they're reading her diary, he says, it looks like you've come right from Manhattan. Now, is that the last entry in her diary, or is that just the last entry in her diary that involved the Doctor?
Right, because then that would seem more like it hasn't been that long since she saw him.
Yeah, I mean, that would have skipped his regeneration and almost and all of Clara, because the last time they were in Manhattan was when he said goodbye to the Ponds.
So when did she age 200 years?
When did she age 200 years? I mean, the doctor did seem kind of surprised when she said 200 years old.
I mean, I guess like she regenerated, we don't know how many times. We know she's at least in her third regeneration.
Yeah.
Because she was Mel's and she was that little girl.
Was that little girl's Mel's? Oh, no, you're talking about it. Yeah, you're right. Different little girl. Girl in space suit.
Right, and then Mel's. So yeah, we know that she regenerated from Mel's to her current form. So we know she's been at least three different versions of herself, but we don't know how much time passed, maybe, you know, from the time she was that little girl until she turned to Mel's. So who knows, you know, maybe that's when she aged that long. I don't know. It's I need a flowchart.
there were a few things like that in the episode, though, that kind of threw me off a little bit. So, like, there's that one where trying to figure out where in the timeline, where in her timeline she is, or how long she's been apart from the doctor. But then as we get towards the end and the spaceship crashes, which I'm totally jumping towards the end, the spaceship crashes on Deryllium. The doctor, they're safe in the TARDIS. The doctor walks out, and one of those big turbines is burning, and it's night. So he goes back to this, to the TARDIS, travels in time just a little bit, walks out. Things are still smoking and smoldering. It's daytime, and a guy's walking around. Okay, so it seems like all he did was sped up the time frame like 12 hours, maybe. But then we come to find out that a night on Deryllium is 24 years. So I'm trying to figure out how that makes sense. I might just be pulling at threads here, but.
Well, maybe he – okay, I see what you're saying, because then the wreckage still wouldn't be burning if it had been 24 years.
Yeah, 24 years. The wreckage should have been done burning. I doubt a guy after 24 years would have been still looking for survivors.
So think of it this way. So the thing crashes in the early hours of the morning while it's still dark.
that's the only thing I could do in my mind to reconcile that. Like they crashed at the last hour of nighttime.
Right, and then it was because, you know, the sun was coming up when the doctor came back and the people were there to clean up the wreckage. This is actually one of my favorite parts of this episode, actually. I've always liked the the timey-wimey stuff. I love the fact that the doctor went to that planet, gave the guy the money to create the restaurant that he would then later take her to.
Yeah, I totally
agree. I thought that was cool. That was genius. No, I really enjoyed that.
I agree. And especially the where he goes out, he gives the diamond, he goes back in, he zooms forward, the restaurant's there, he goes in, he asks if he can have a table. They say 4 years on Christmas Day. He's like, no problem. And the next thing we know, they're 4 years in the future. Yeah, I definitely loved that part of it. It was really good.
Yeah, that was one of the standout things in the episode for me. Okay, so before we get to the part, I think we're kind of jumping...
We're all over the place, but that's cool.
Before we get to the part where I feel like there's a couple key scenes with the doctor and River. Number one, when she realizes it's the doctor.
Yes.
And then number two, the final scene at the end.
Yep.
But let's save that stuff for now and jump back and just talk a little bit about the other characters that showed up in the episode. We have Hydra Flax.
AKA Baymax.
Baymax, yeah, that was interesting. I thought it was funny, the color scheme and just the general shape of it did remind me of Baymax. But I was like, oh, it's just coincidence.
Right.
But then when he pops the wings out and flies up into the sky, I was like, that is Baymax. Like, that is a complete ripoff.
Yeah, there was no hiding that. I'm waiting.
They went too far with that, I think. If you're gonna rip off that character, at least change the color of the armor, you know.
I was looking at the bottom of his foot, like waiting to find a Disney symbol or something.
Right, yeah. So that was kind of funny. But what did you think about the actor, the guy who played the very over the top part of Hydra Flax?
Yeah, like you said, we kinda got that indication going in. Over the top cheesy. I feel like we can say that about two other villains, evil people, monsters throughout series 9 of Doctor Who, where they played over the top cookie cutter bad guys. And it worked out perfectly. It's like, why would you have them be anybody else? We didn't need that character to have depth, right? We just needed someone to chase Riversong and the Doctor and give them some reason to interact with each other. It was over the top. It was goofy how the head could be disconnected and still talk. There were some comical moments, the head in the bag that had the Doctor laughing and he hadn't laughed in a long time. Different things like that. But the character itself, very flat. Very cookie cutter, exactly what you'd expect it to be. And you know what? It worked.
It kind of reminded me of Odin.
Yeah, exactly. False Odin.
False Odin. Where, yeah, that guy, the actor they picked or however the direction was, it made sense. You know, they're going for that, you know, kind of ridiculous villain. And that's who this guy was. He was just ridiculous. But yeah. I thought it worked. It worked well. I thought that guy they picked to play it played it really well. You know, I had already bought in at this point on, okay, this is going to be one of those episodes. I'm just going to get on board and just ride this out. And so it didn't bother me at all. I thought I actually laughed a lot at the stuff that was going on with that character.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, we had false Odin, but then we also had the lion guy who is just there to roar and be mean. Like that's all the depth that character needed. They've given us a lot of those this season where that's just that's who they are. But yeah, you're right, he was exactly what he ought to be. I laughed at what was the line when he's arguing with Riversong in the beginning, but you're my wife, don't change the subject. Just some of the interactions were good.
And he had like his own personal bodyguards that happened to be like monk ninjas. And I was like, no explanation. Like,
none whatsoever.
Who are these guys?
It doesn't matter.
That was funny. So then another character we get is Ramon, River's other husband, who doesn't remember being her husband. I guess hence the title. Now we have three husbands of Riversong.
Right.
In the episode. Kind of a throwaway character. He really didn't do much other than kiss River a couple times. Almost pointless in my mind. I think they could have done this episode other than just needing to have a third husband. He really didn't need to be there.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Other than giving River some younger man, the tall, dark, and handsome style younger guy to kiss to drive the Doctor crazy, that's the only reason why Ramon was there. And again, he felt very much of a cliche character. Like he was exactly who he needed to be in the episode for the three lines that he got to say. nothing much. Even at the end, after his head is stolen, and at the end he's on Hydroflax's body, and he's just like, hey, I'm here. Don't worry. They rescued me. The evil part has been deleted. It's like, okay, yep. there is nothing to you.
He's definitely not the kind of guy that River would really, you know, want to be with. I think it's more the kind of guy she would use for, you know, for her own purposes, but not necessarily somebody like that she'd want to be with for a long period of time.
Yeah. I mean, she married Hydroflex for the diamond, right? She married this guy for his looks and what have you. And I guess the question was, why did she marry the Doctor?
Right, because a monolith cannot love you back.
A monolith cannot love you back.
Yeah, so the scene where the Doctor gets to be the companion, where he gets to pretend that he's seeing the TARDIS for the first time. I feel like this is a hit or miss. I feel like as a Doctor Who fan, you either really loved this scene or you just thought it was dumb. Where did you fall on that?
I absolutely loved it, especially when he wraps it up by saying, oh, finally, I've always wanted someone to do it right. Like when he says, where is it? my entire understanding of physical space has been transformed. Like his voice inflection the entire time as he's rattling off the different phrases. Just it was so good.
Cracking up, especially the first time I watched the episode. I was cracking up. I love the fact like he looks at his situation, he realizes what's about to happen. He's about to walk into the TARDIS with River. She doesn't think he's ever seen it before. So he says, finally, it's my go. You know, he gets in there. And then, he just rattles off all this crazy stuff. And, I just loved it. It was...
I could totally go back and watch that scene over and over and over. That is one of those scenes that I will watch this episode again just to watch that part.
Right. That scene is a defining moment, I feel like, for the Doctor, because I don't, I haven't seen all the classic stuff. But as far as I know, that has never happened before for the Doctor to kind of play that part, pretend that he's a companion in a way. It's almost like him mocking all the companions.
He definitely is. And that none of them did it right.
Right. And I it was perfect. It's one of those scenes that no matter what you think about the episode as a whole, this scene specifically will stick out to me as something that I will remember and want to see again from time to time. It kind of stands up there with a lot of those, defining scenes for the different Doctors. This is one of the defining scenes for the 12th Doctor for me.
Yep. I agree. It's kind of crazy that it's a Christmas special, that it's a totally goofy scene, but it is one of those moments. And Capaldi is just, Capaldi is dynamic. He really is. The way that he can be super serious, he can be super sarcastic, he can be super goofy. He's just all over the place, and it never seems out of character for him. He always seems like he can just nail it. Whenever the time comes, that's one of those moments. It seemed like he was in theater. That's what he was doing. He was putting on theater right there.
Right. So another character we get in this is Scratch. I think when we were talking about this after we had seen the preview, or no, we had read the synopsis for this episode, and I told you one of the things I'm noticing about this is the naming is really dumb. And Scratch wasn't even in that. That was just based on Hydra Flask and the title of the episode. But Scratch, really? That kind of
they're showing their hands there, right? Those are the characters that don't matter. Those are the characters that they just put in there to move the story along.
He kind of reminded me of what was the name of that guy that was basically a bundle of snakes?
Colony Sarf. Yeah, Sarf. There we go.
That's who it was. Basically, Colony Sarf without the snakes is how this guy felt to me. And then the whole idea of like his face coming in half like that. I'm not sure why he didn't just carry his money in his pocket.
Put it in your pocket, but at least slap a chain on the wallet. Like, that's just as safe as keeping it in your head.
It was what it was. It was continuing with the theme of the episode where everything was just really over the top. I thought that was kind of humorous and very disgusting.
Yeah. Like you said, very much like Colony Sarf, to the point where he and all the others like him hiss. I don't know why they were hissing other than... it works. I don't know. But yeah, it was a really interesting character. And I didn't even catch that his name was Scratch until the second time I watched it. And it honestly made me laugh out loud when I saw in the subtitles it comes up, Scratch says this. You have to be kidding me.
Fleming, another character, the kind of waiter, I guess, character that deals with them. Pretty cool makeup job on that one, I thought. Interesting alien looking species.
Yeah, I have to give it to him. It does. It worked. Like, it definitely looked like a alien character as opposed to just a guy in a blue mask.
He was interesting. I actually liked that character. I thought, out of the different villains that they came across, he was maybe the more interesting. Kind of seeing his opportunity there. So I like that character. He was interesting to me, and kind of how he's taking the opportunity to save his own life by offering up the Doctor, knowing that River may lead them to the Doctor. The scene with him reading from her diary, so we get to hear all the different, you know, references to stories that we've already seen, you know, the crash of the Byzantium or
Angels. Jim the Fish.
Jim the Fish, Angels in Manhattan, like, you know, all of those things are kind of referenced. So I thought that was kind of a cool little scene there.
Yeah, and I mean, considering the fact that he seems to be almost in charge of the starship that is filled with people who burn planets and massacre people, it's kind of what you would expect of him, right? You would expect some guy who can still serve and be courteous in that way, but you would expect him to have this darker side where he's willing to cut people's throats would need be. And yeah, I would agree. He was another character that was well done in this episode.
And River says as much when she talks about that place in general. Like, it costs $1 billion to get in. You have to have, you know, have committed some sort of atrocity to be there. And then even the staff, you know, has to have a history of you know, that kind of stuff as well.
Indiscriminate slaughter.
Right. So it makes sense that this guy was not going to necessarily be very, you know, he's definitely not a good guy. Everyone yeah. there, minus the Doctor and River, are unsavory characters.
River might be unsavory as well.
True. But I don't know how much of that is put on.
Yeah,
and how much of that is really who River is. Because she seems to, once she realizes that she's in the presence of the Doctor, she kind of reverts back to that River that we remember.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the conversation that River has with the Doctor. She realizes it's the Doctor because, you know, what's his name? Fleming basically says, hey, we know that the Doctor, you know, we're basically using you as bait. You know, the Doctor will show up to save you. And she's kind of like, no, he's not going to show up to save me. And then she gets into this kind of over the top description of, you know, how, you know, you can love the Doctor, but he's not going to love you back. You know, that kind of thing. I don't know. What did you think about that little monologue that she had?
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Do you think that, I mean, towards the end, she said she was just basically taking up time. She was just filling dead air so that they would hold the conversation longer because she's an archaeologist and she knows that this ship crashed, which is another blank space in my mind that I am still kind of puzzled by. But anyways, she knew that it was going to crash, so she was just filling up space so that it would get to the point where she could escape. Do you think she was so adamant about the Doctor that she truly does love the Doctor, but she doesn't feel like the Doctor loves her back?
Yeah, I think that it was a legitimate emotion that we were seeing from her, and everything that she was saying, I think she really did mean. Maybe she was trying to kill time, but at the same time, I feel like she was, you know, saying things that were from the heart. She probably more than any other companion has had to deal with that. You know, Rose had her little fling with the Doctor, but it was kind of, you know, she got her Doctor. She got to keep the other version of the Doctor who could age with her, right?
Yeah.
And then beyond Rose, we really don't get that type of a relationship with any companion. So I always kind of felt like Rose and River were the two that it was a more of a romantic relationship. And so River is the one that has to deal with him leaving. You know, he's constantly leaving. She's going her way. He's going his way. And so I think, you know, it's probably a frustration that she has that she does feel like, you know, she does love this man and it's impossible for him to love her back because he is so, you know, the way she was describing it, you know, he's this, I don't even remember all the language she used, but it was just ridiculous.
He's the star. He's the sunset. He's
right.
The...
You know, I think that she just, it just probably has taken a toll on her. And this is the person. I mean, if you love someone like the Doctor, is anybody else ever going to be able to measure up? So, like, she's not, it's not like she can just, you know, break up with the Doctor and then he moves on to the next companion. But what is she moving on to? Ramon?
She did try to move on to Ramon.
So, yeah. I don't know. What did you think?
Yeah, I think I'm still trying to decide. I think vast majority of it was, you know what? I'm just going to go and say all of it was serious because she had no idea that the doctor was standing there. And it wasn't until that she recognized that the doctor was there that she started to feel a little bit different. Somewhat embarrassed that he was able to even witness that. And then she tried to play it off like it wasn't a big deal. So yeah, I think it was legitimate.
I thought it was funny when she did realize it was him and then she starts trying to play it off and yeah. She's like, oh, you definitely need to do those roots.
Yeah.
And those, then he's those, like, and then he starts like quoting back things that she just said to him.
the roots of the sunset.
Yeah. So I thought that was, he definitely had the upper hand at that point. She had tipped her hand. So yeah, that was, I thought it was a touching scene to see her kind of open up that way. And then have her realize that she actually was in the presence of the doctor after, you know, because who has that opportunity to really, if you're talking to somebody that you are in love with, you're usually not saying everything that's on your mind. You know, you're holding back. You're not going to ever really tell somebody 100% how you feel, especially if you don't think they feel the same way about you. So she accidentally did that to the doctor. So that was, it was interesting. It was definitely an interesting situation. But it kind of, you know, so then that leads to the rescue scene or more the escape scene. I did like the idea of the fact that she had planned all along for them to be standing in that position with the, you know, because she knew the meteor shower was coming because she, you know, in her own right is a bit of a time traveler. So she had already experienced digging this, you know, wreckage up. So she knew the history of it. She knew exactly when it was going to go down. So I thought that was kind of a cool little twist.
Yeah, it was fun to have that situation of where would you stand if there was a meteor strike? What are you talking about? Well, I think the safest place would be right here. And then do you think that would be a coincidence? And then everything falls through and they escape that way. And then they go about their merry business of trying to save everybody and then realizing it's probably not worth it.
And it's all leading to the big scene at the end. He's going to take her to that dinner. This is all just a vessel to get them there. A lot of it doesn't make sense. You know, we were kind of talking about before the, you know, when he confronts Baymax and he pulls out the bank ball and, you know, plugs it into his head and for whatever reason,
shoves him in the head.
You know, for whatever reason that shuts him down. And, you know, there's all kinds of holes in that logic. But it's really just trying to get them to the point where, you know, there's the wreckage, the doctor has the, you know, the restaurant built and then takes her there for the big final, you know, scene with River and the doctor, which I think they're implying this might be it. You know, this might be the last. Although I think they did leave a little bit of a window open because she said, you know, I've heard stories, you know, that this is our last night. And he said, I never said that, you know, so he's still kind of leaving some deniability there that maybe this isn't their last night together.
Right. Plus they have 24 years and they still have a TARDIS. So there's time means nothing at this point.
It, true. I hope, as much as I like River, I actually do really like River as a character. I do kind of hope this is the end of that character because I think it's a good ending. It kind of leads into, We know River's, you know, at least from our perspective, you know, she essentially dies with the 10th Doctor. And when we meet her with the 10th Doctor, we know that she's met the Doctor before. And so then we move on and find out all of her adventures with the 11th Doctor. And we kind of assume that's it, you know, that she goes from the 11th back to the 10th and then dies. So they're kind of throwing in this story with Capaldi where actually her last experience before she meets the 10th is actually with Capaldi, which makes a lot of sense because when she met Tennant, she told him he looked a lot younger.
Yep.
Which at the time didn't really make a lot of sense because you're like, wait, she, you know, is coming from Smith to Tennant. So if anything, he looks older. Right. So this is kind of a nice, you know, Moffat had it planned all along, right? You know, that's why he cast Capaldi in the first place, so he could have somebody, so he could explain that one line.
I'm sure that, honestly, I wouldn't put it past him. He needed to do it.
it's kind of a nice bow, you know. They put a nice little bow on it. You know, this is their last night together, and then she's going to go into her next adventure at the library, and then that's it.
You know what? I'm with you that I hope this legitimately is the end. I think it's one of those moments where the character finally has their due. It feels like where we can lay them to rest, and it feels like a good, a fitting goodbye, similar to what we had the first time we said goodbye to Clara, where it was like, oh wow, totally unexpected, but that just feels right. I'm hoping that they cheapen, probably isn't the right word, but I'm hoping that they don't cheapen this goodbye with bringing her back yet again. It feels good just to let her be.
Right. And I mean, she could come back. I don't know. Actually, no, you're right. I don't think she could without it cheapening it. Because at this point, you know, she is a time traveler, so she can show up anywhere. But any doctor that we get moving forward is going to be the next doctor. You know, it's not like, you know, if they did some kind of a, you know, Smith episode or a Tennant episode that was like a kind of a one-off special, sure, then you could bring River back. But at this point, they need to just not have her meet any other doctors.
Yep, agreed.
It wouldn't really make sense. So yeah. I do want your take on kind of the final dialogue between the two characters as they're looking out over the two pillars. Because there's kind of different ways you can look at that, like kind of what the doctor meant. How did you interpret it?
That is a great question. There's so much going on in that last conversation, just as far as like the always being the perfect distance apart. There, and just when you need it, there's a song. It in a way, it seemed like the doctor, I mean, it was a picture of their relationship, that there's always this distance between them, but it's not a distance that shouldn't be there. It's how it ought to be. But then there's always that moment when she is right where he needs her at that point in time. I'm wondering if it's kind of going back to everything that has taken place, and even the TARDIS wanting to cheer up the doctor. And then when the head in the bag is yelling at them and the doctor says, I haven't laughed like this in a long time, River was right there for him, right when he needed her at the perfect point in time. It's kind of a farewell to River, but it's also putting the doctor back in the position that the doctor needs to be moving forward.
Okay. So I think you interpreted it much how I did. I kind of thought of it as the towers were almost like a reflection of the two characters of the Doctor and River. And so you have the two towers and, you know, they're like together, but they're apart at the same time. And, you know, kind of how the Doctor was explaining it with, you know, when it's just right, when the time is just right, when the night is perfect, you know, when you least expect it, there's a song. And, you know, so when... that's what creates that, you know, that melody, which her name happens to be. I just thought it was kind of a pretty poetic ending. Kind of like super romantic, cheesy, but I didn't mind it.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then they spend 24 years together, happily ever after, but not for real.
Well, it was the whole like statement that she made as far as like happily ever after doesn't mean forever. It just means... and they both lived happily ever after, and they both lived happily. So it doesn't matter. At the end, they were happy. I think that's what it's communicating.
What do you think of the towers? I love them. Then why are you ignoring them? They're ignoring me. But then you can't expect a monolith to love you back.
Oh, burn.
No, you can't.
That's the best response right there, though. Just saying, you're right. You can't.
They've been there for millions of years, through storms and floods and wars and time. Nobody really understands where the music comes from. So yeah, I just feel like he's talking about him and River at this point.
Yeah.
It's probably something to do with the precise positions, the distance between both towers. So that's kind of what I was meaning. Like, they each one of them is one of the towers, and you know they can't necessarily be right together. They have to have like this distance between them for it to work.
Yep.
Even the locals aren't sure. All anyone will ever tell you is that when the wind stands fair and the night is perfect, when you least expect it, but always when you need it the most, there is a song. Stephen Moffat.
He's a master.
He's him and his poetic writing. So, and then they have the kind of reverse Han Solo Leia moment at the end. I hate you. No, you don't. But I don't know. Like, overall, I really liked this episode. It was what it was. It was just this really cheesy, over the top Christmas episode, but I liked it. There wasn't really a lot about it I didn't like. You know, it was timey wimey. It had cool, you know, poetic moments. It had river. You know, I was down for it. I liked it.
Yeah, expectations killed my first watch through. Number one, Christmas special. So I always have high hopes for Christmas specials. Why? Just because it's a special.
The season finales are always better than the Christmas specials.
I know. I don't know. I can't tell you how many times I've been burned by it, but it's a special. Special to me means that it should be something special. So I have these huge expectations. So number one, it's a Christmas special. Number two, River Song was returning. So I just expected like this big event, and in my mind, probably akin to the 50th anniversary special. For some reason, that's what it became in my mind. So the first walkthrough, I was terribly disappointed. I thought it was just the goofiest throwaway episode I'd watched. But then stepping back and being like, okay, no, it's a Doctor Who episode. Let me watch it. And I watched it without having all those expectations. I'm with you. I really liked it. It's a really good episode. It has a lot of great moments in it. It has a lot of great dialogue. It's Moffat. Of course, it has great dialogue. But then it also has just these like these quirky, funny moments that are great. So, yeah, I really liked it. It just took me two watches to get to that point where I no longer was burdened by those expectations.
I would think a great way to watch this episode would probably be watch the Angels Take Manhattan, then watch this, and then watch the Silence in the Library stuff.
Yep, I think that's what I'm going to be doing.
In that order, just like sit down one night, you know, that you have some time, watch those, what would that be, four episodes, five episodes? Yep. Four, I think. Four. You know, and there's a lot of other River stuff out there that you can watch, but I feel like those four episodes, you know, kind of watched back to back to back to back, could give you like a really cool flow through the story and where her mentality is. So yeah, I definitely need to do that. I haven't done that. I've been meaning to try to watch some more River stuff to prepare me, you know, for this episode. Didn't get the time to do it, but I think that's going to be my next project, to kind of sit down and watch them in that order.
Yeah, I'm with you. I want to watch it through that order as well. I feel like it would just be a pretty fun story to get those high points of River Song.
Definitely. Well, I'm glad to hear you came back around, because I know when we first watched this and I got some texts from you, you weren't too keen on this episode. So I'm glad to... I was kind of thinking we were going to have this role reversal today where I was the one that was defending it and you were the one that was picking it apart. seems like we're kind of both on the same page at this point.
Yeah, it just took a second watch through. There's still one thing that I'm not too sure about, though.
What's that?
So, she knows... Well, two things. I'm going to say two things. Number one, she knows that the spaceship is going to crash because she dug it up. But then when it's crashing into Deryllium, she's like, I know that planet. Like, she's surprised that it's going to be crashing into Deryllium. But I thought she already dug it up, so wouldn't she know that it crashed into Deryllium?
Yeah, like I was saying before, this was just a vehicle to get them to that last scene. There's all kinds of holes in the logic of what happens between the point of the floor collapsing and the point that the doctor and her like enter the restaurant. Everything in between it, a lot of that doesn't make sense.
Okay, so next thing. Okay, ready? Next thing. She's stolen the TARDIS multiple times. So it's similar to where we got that picture inside the doctor's head where it made you go back and question all the other times that we see him talking to himself. I feel like now I'm always wondering if River just stole the TARDIS.
I mean, the first doctor got separated from the TARDIS all the time. So it's all River's fault. She was just taking joyrides the whole time.
And he was slower than most, so...
Yeah, right. She knew she had extra time.
Yeah, she always had a little bit more time on her hands.
So, yeah, definitely. I thought that was kind of a funny thing to think about, though, that the doctor was so confident, like, oh, I'd notice, or he'd notice, and then she's like, oh, he didn't notice the last, you know, few times or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good stuff.
Good stuff.
And now we have to wait until who knows when for another episode of Doctor Who, but... We probably will be doing episodes of Bad Wolf Radio while we're waiting. I think we're going to do possibly a recap episode, you know, of the season in general. Right? Didn't we talk about this?
Yeah, we did. We talked about it.
I'm making sure I'm not making promises that I can't keep.
No, we'll definitely be wrapping our recap, wrapping things up.
We actually just got an invite from another podcast to do a crossover episode.
I saw that.
So maybe we'll be doing that. So yeah, we'll see. There'll definitely be some more episodes of Bad Wolf Radio. And then, of course, we always have the classic episodes to jump back into. We finished the first Doctor, but we haven't jumped into the second Doctor yet.
Yeah, so, I mean, we have a brand new Doctor to jump into. Yeah, kind of so crazy.
We definitely have plenty of material that we can jump into in the off season as we wait for season 10 of Doctor Who.
Yeah, if there's going to be a season 10, right?
There is.
I know. I'm just tossing that out there to make people angry with me.
So I think we're good to wrap this up.
Sounds good.
All right. So as usual, you can leave us a review on iTunes. We would love for you guys to do that. If you enjoy our show, head on over to iTunes, leave us a nice 5-star review. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast, Facebook, Bad Wolf Radio. Just search for us. We're the one with the black and white logo. And you can send us feedback, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. And just a programming note, we are no longer on the Shot Glass Digital Network. We're kind of breaking out on our own, so you can find our episodes at www.badwolfpodcast.com. And until next time,
later days.